This is Wade Rathke. It's Wade's World. That means it's Friday, 9 to 9:30. We're on KABF FM 88.3, 100,000 watts of people power. In Wade's World, every week, we talk to the most interesting people in the world. Today, we are really lucky. We're talking to people in Bristol, England. I've got Stu Melvin with me, and I've got Louis Herbert, who are organizers here in Bristol. We're going to talk about a couple of things, and you're going to be surprised at some of what you hear. But the first thing we're going to talk about is the government claims they're involved in community organizing in Britain. What's up with that? Louis, Stu, tell us what's going on. We want some of that.
So, the government claim they're involved in community organizing here in Britain. They have a national community organizers program that up until September of last year I was working on. I worked on it for a year. What that program is that over the course of 4 years, which is a government term over here, the government are training 500 people as what they call, you know, as trainee community organisers. So I think every 3 months or so, they're, you know, sending 30 community organisers out. Each of those organisers working in a slightly different community with a brief of listening to people and, you know, turning that listening into some form of community action.
Now, you guys, are they just dropped, they parachuted into a neighborhood or a city or a town or what? How do they get assigned once they get out of their first little training?
So people are applying for jobs generally, you know, close to where they live, in the same way that anybody would generally apply for a job close to where they live. They're not quite being, you know, handpicked to work in certain communities. But more often than not, they are working in communities that they don't know at all. And it's, although it's the government who have led this program, who have funded it, I think, you know, the government realises that they need to have some sort of base in the local community they're working in. So each of the organisers that's out there has like a local host organisation, which will be a community centre or some other kind of like local group with a physical space for the organisers to work out of. And hopefully the government will believe that those people will also have some kind of way of integrating the organiser into the community somewhat.
These are non-profits, I assume.
Yeah. Not always. They're mostly.
Interesting. So a for-profit could end up being a sponsor for a community organizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really? That's kind of wild.
Maybe a housing association, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that'd be different than the U.S. I mean, it's to the degree in the U.S. they still do have something called a VISTA program. It was always people assigned to nonprofits because they were volunteers in service to America. That's what VISTA stood for.
And okay.
Younger people, sometimes coming out of school or university or whatever, would sign up, some older people, and they would get assigned. But they didn't necessarily have a charge of being community organizers. They were just whatever help people needed. So what kind of training did you get before you plopped into the community?
Before we were plopped into the community, we got... you know, they referred to it as a intensive weekend training. So we got a 2-day training where, you know, the 30 of us that were starting on that same particular start date were taken away to like a nice big house in the countryside, and it were given a model of community organising as it was referred to, developed by an organisation called Regenerate, which is known as Root Solutions Listening Matters.
Root Solutions Listening Matters.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
That's a model. You can say that, you know, and people understand you. Root Solutions Listening Matters. Well, certainly listening is fundamental for community organizers. There's no question about that. So once you listen, then what would theoretically happen?
So, I mean, this is kind of, you know, one of the issues that people will talk about is that, you know, theoretically what would happen is that by virtue of listening, people who you are listening to would somehow become more, you know, self-actualized human beings and would kind of like magically start organizing in their community. I think kind of RSLM is based in the idea that there are existing networks in communities, that there are people that are ready to act, and that simply by virtue of an organizer knocking on their door and saying, hey, why haven't you acted yet? Those people will suddenly go out and act and begin to organise in their communities.
And did you work here in Bristol?
Yeah, I worked here in Bristol.
So, guys, give us a sense of Bristol. You know, in the United States, what they know about Bristol is everybody does the Bristol stomp, right? I mean, it's, but the kids in Bristol are sharp as a pistol, and they do the Bristol stomp. I'm sure you've been raised with that song. I know that. And so tell us about what's Bristol City like? What is this?
Bristol City's a fast-changing place right now. But like everywhere, you know, we've had obviously just like everywhere, sort of 5 years of kind of recession and problems with jobs and things like that. Bristol probably hasn't been hit as bad as some other places, certainly some places up north, but it's definitely been hit.
And you have a trade union background, don't you, Stuart?
Yeah, so my background is working for, well, firstly working in retail as a union member and a lay rep, and then working for Unison, which is one of the biggest public service unions here in the UK.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's definitely my kind of understanding of things.
So we know a little bit about the recession in the United States that was driven by, you know, housing, Wall Street speculation. Mm-hmm. Is that were the triggering factors here in the Bristol area in the UK?
I think it was the same thing.
It was just a whole meltdown.
Yeah, huh? it passed on, and obviously we had some big banks go bust, and same as you did in the States, and the state bailed them out to the tune of about £90 billion. You know, and of course the thing here is that the right wing managed to exploit that crisis to get re-elected, a kind of disaster capitalism idea, and they, you know, the Tory Conservative Party got into power and managed to mix the crisis with an ideological shift to smash the welfare state, cut public spending. Well, you know, portray it as that anyway. They're not cutting public spending. It's just who they give it to that's changed, you know, or got worse, maybe. And, you know, I think that's had a massive impact. So, yeah, a lot of jobs have gone. But the other thing is that the housing market has certainly bounced back, they say, which is, you know, portrayed as a good thing in a lot of ways. But I mean, it's a bad thing. We're on route to another crash, effectively. And where we work in a certain neighbourhood here in Bristol, you know, you've seen house prices double, possibly treble in the last 10 years, and the social change that inevitably brings to a neighbourhood.
So it's kind of a contradiction, it would seem, to be both forcing an austerity program in a declining economy and then claiming your creative community organizing program. Was this sort of a sop they were throwing out, a head fake, or was it something that...
Well, you know, it depends kind of how, you know, what side of bed I wake up on the morning, how malicious I kind of tend to interpret some of it as. It's definitely no surprise that the community organiser programme came into effect at the same time as the austerity measures. It came into effect at the same time as something that David Cameron referred to as the Big Society.
And who's David Cameron?
David Cameron is the current Prime Minister.
So that's the big dog here, it's like we have a President Obama. David Cameron is
exactly
who drives the truck. Okay.
Exactly, same guy. And it's so kind of, you know, the big society, the idea behind it is about, you know, helping out your neighbour, helping out your community, or essentially you might want to, you know, refer to that as filling in the gaps that are now being cut by public services.
Because that's probably really what it's about, is if you're cutting with one hand, this is something that's supposedly going to soften some of the harder edge.
Exactly, you know, so the idea would be that, you know, what's going on is that you're going to instead, oh, you know, you've suddenly lost this service and your community now isn't getting its litter picked up and everything's really messy on the streets. You know, I just gave a Cameron, so it would be that the community organiser would knock on people's doors and he'd ask them what problems they were facing, and the first thing people would notice would be the litter on their streets, and the community organiser would say, well, hey, let's organise, let's go pick up that litter.
Let's get our shovels and cans, or cans as they call them.
Yeah,
here. Yeah.
Exactly, and get a nice kind of community feel going and everything will be fine. That's kind of the idea there.
Well, and we met a lot of very well-intentioned community organizers the other day in a session that Stu and Louie and a comrade of theirs, who's not with us right now, named Nick Ballard, organized at the University of London Student Union Center. And we must have had, 30, 35, largely community organizers in this program who seemed desperate to know how to do something that was real in community organizing. So it's not like any of them had bad intentions, it's just they really didn't seem to be given skills to make something happen.
Yeah,
it's definitely the truth. I mean, you know, like any of these, it's kind of backfired on the government, or at least we hope it's going to be backfiring on the government. You know, we've I think the context of this very much was these guys were effectively supposed to somehow drum up volunteers, as you say, to run services and fill the gaps, and that was like a clever attempt to privatise effectively, because not only would you either see volunteers do it or don't, and if they manage to run that service, then a company in future knows that that's a viable profitable service. If they fail, then the company knows not to buy that, right? But also, you know, typically these people are not going to succeed running these services. They've got no training, no education, no way of doing it. So that service is going to be up for sale in 3 or 4 years, you know, when they struggle, when they find it hard. But, you know, the flip side of that is that all of the people who took these jobs, took these community organising jobs, of course, are good people and do good things, and, you know.
Yeah, young, they were in their mid-20s to mid-30s, yeah. I would say.
And they've been told half of the story. They've been told, go and listen to the motivation, and that's it. You know, they haven't been told what to do with that. So, yeah, they were excited to hear what we could do with that.
So after the first year, what happens, Lily?
So, I mean, you know, it depends on, I guess, like, a couple of things. I mean, the deal that you get, so in your first year, you get paid a training bursary. What you also get included in your contract is that if you're able to find funding for year two, then you'll get that funding matched by the government. So for every pound that you're able to raise, the government will also throw in a pound, so long as you are community organising. So, I mean, you know, it really has depended. I mean, for a lot of people, what that has actually meant is that they've become cheap labour. And actually, rather than doing community organising, they've continued to do something much more akin to community development. You know, I mean,
try to hang on with the agency they were assigned to in some sort of semi-social worker capacity.
Exactly, but you know, they'll be co-opted into the agenda of whatever that agency was,
sure.
Whether it was a housing association or a community centre or whatever. I mean, they're not out to build power and change their communities. You know, they're out to make sure they get their little piece and everything works out all right. And you can imagine, particularly the same with all the cuts at the moment to public services, a full-time employee where over half their salary will get paid for is a pretty attractive option.
Well, and it's I'm here in Wade's world. I'm talking to Stu Melvin, and I'm talking to Louis Herbert, and we're talking about a community organizing program. But in the second year, it gives us some different opportunities. You guys are now, along with Nick, involved in launching Acorn Bristol. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a good way. We match pound by pound, and I don't know if this is what Prime Minister Cameron intended, but here we come.
Yeah, you know, one of the real lucky things is that the grant agreement that you sign has got, you know, much looser wording than we thought it would do. We were really surprised to find out we could actually go out and do some real organising and still, you know, completely fulfil all of the criteria they needed us to fill. I mean, the hard part was that we, me and Nick, who were the organisers from last year, we really had to go out and work in order to raise this money ourselves. But once we had it raised, then, you know, we've been all good.
And how long did it? I think you told me, or maybe Nick, that only about 30% of the people who come to the program have been able to raise enough to go on in any direction. So
that's right.
How
yeah.
long did it take for you to raise your match?
It took us like just over 3 months.
It's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's, you know, just over 3 months of, you know, working as close to full time as we could for no pay.
That's not good.
which is not.
Yeah, that's
not
a plus
so good.
And minus here. Hey, you were successful. Did you starve to death?
Well, yeah, we're still sat here today.
Yeah, here we are. And, you know, you can't see them on the radio, but they're not gaunt. They're not overweight, but they're not gaunt. So it must have worked out. And so where did most of the support end up coming from?
So, I mean, the support came from two places. It came from a union here called the IWW, which Stu might fill you in a bit more, and he's a bit more knowledgeable than I am. And then the rest of it came from some individuals that shared our politics and shared our ideas, and already, you know, they knew a little bit about the ACORN model and were excited to see if it could work here in the UK, and thought they'd be happy to take a punt on us, really.
And we're sitting now in your office here in Bristol. And what neighborhood? We're near the neighborhood y'all are identifying as the likely place for the first organizations to be built. So tell us a little bit about Easton, I think it is.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we're right now, our office is basically halfway between Easton and the city centre. Eastern's quite a big area, and a historically interesting area in the sense that it was very much a white working class area, going back some years, and then had a big sort of Afro-Caribbean influx, probably back in the 60s and 70s. Obviously, that sort of bleeds into other areas around the area. You know, and since then, it's become a very, very diverse community, and you know, we've got a big Somalian community, we've got a big sort of Arabic and Middle Eastern community, and Pakistani community, and you know, a lot of different people in here together. And there's some you know, fascinating and beautiful sides to that, and there's some issues with that. There's a little bit of segregation to some extent, but you know, Eastern's as far as England goes, my experience of living in this country, like, Eastern has a very high percentage of existing kind of community organisations and cultural activities and people doing things, you know, which is good. You know, it's changing again though right now. So you know, I've not been here too long, but even I can see already that there's I don't know, you have the phrase gentrification in the United States. So what I guess we're seeing happen is.
Here, I think it's called regeneration.
Regeneration, yeah, it's part of the plan, man. You know, we're starting to see, as I say, house prices have sort of doubled or trebled in the last 10 years. And it's not a problem with the people that are moving in or what they like to do or any of these things, but of course the arts community and things attracts people. It's a nice neighbourhood in some ways. Uh-huh. It's run down and decrepit in other ways.
But the housing stock, the basic housing stock is solid from what little I saw.
The housing stock is solid in some sense. It's old housing, so there's a lot of problems with damp, rotting housing and things like that. And
because we didn't go into it, but Bristol is a humid climate.
It's a wet place.
It's sort of the Seattle of the Seattle of Britain.
Yeah, it does.
And we probably didn't say how large is Bristol at this point. About how big a city is this?
I think it's around about 300,000.
Yeah,
something like
300,000. So, for those listeners here at KABF FM 88.3, Voice of the People, that's about the size of Little Rock, North Little Rock. 350,000 is normally the quoted population here at Little Rock, North Little Rock, and we're about within a push of that size in Bristol. So it's a reasonably sized city, not the biggest, obviously, in the UK, but certainly not one you'd forget about. And traditionally, what were the big industries here?
Well, I mean, you've got different things. So, I mean, the whole of the Southwest traditionally has been agricultural. The whole, you know, sort of mining and agriculture. There was docks, there was shipbuilding, there was other things like this.
Yeah, you think of it as a port city.
Yeah,
is that right?
You know, yeah. It's not far. It's definitely, like, really going back historically. Yeah, it's a big trade centre. You know, there's a lot of connections back to the pirate world and to ex-slaves and all these kind of things.
Oh, okay, a little bit more New Orleans than Little Rock.
Yeah,
I hear you.
You go right back. Nowadays, you know, pretty much like everything in the UK, it's service sector primarily. It's retail, it's IT, you know, this kind of service sector. And then people work informal economy and low-wage jobs with cleaners or security guards or whatever.
Well, and as you say, that's everywhere now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the world, you know.
And is that the kind of jobs that people you find in Easton, or what kind of, what's left of what will be the working folks in the community are looking at?
That's it, really. People are working in those service sector economy, informal economy. Obviously, because of the diversity of the community, there's a lot of owned businesses and small businesses and things like this. There's also a lot of unemployment. There's a lot of people on benefits right now.
Right.
You know.
Well, we'll get into the benefits, but talking about the workforce, we talked to some people from Unison and some people from Unite in terms of unions. They're talking about community organizing as well in some shape or form. This is really a hot topic here in the UK. So, when they think about community organizing, what are they really talking about?
Well, it depends. So Unite are the first union to start up what they call community membership. Technically speaking, I'm a member of Unite's community membership scheme. You know, their plan has been, or at least to my knowledge, has been somewhat confused, and has been an issue of looking at unemployed workers, trying to bring them into the union for a very small membership due, helping them to access benefits and services in their community, and, you know, potentially longer term when they get jobs, bring them into the union proper, probably involve them in parliamentary politics locally, these sort of things. You know, that they haven't been following a model the same as we do, so they haven't been door knocking, they haven't been doing things like this.
Reading some of the material we got from Unite in a meeting that Stu and Nick and I were at yesterday, a lot of it looks very similar to what's called the Union Privilege Program for AFL-CIO unions, or associate membership programs, where it's largely based on organizing an unemployed and almost anybody who's not represented in a collective unit, but offering us benefits of some kind in exchange, you know, free legal advice, some job, light level, you know, resume training, some this, that, and the other. They had a pamphlet that I read this morning about 15 reasons to join. Almost all of them were benefits that you might get if you paid 50 pence a week, and I guess 50 pence a week is
less than a dollar.
Well, it's about, but it's $3.33 a month, according to Mr. Google. that's, you know, to give people in the U.S. some sense, so you'd be paying a little over $3 a month in dues, and maybe you could access these benefits, and maybe it turns out to be some kind of support or political involvement or some sort of larger community with labor in your areas. So it's not community organizing in the sense that even what we were talking about a minute ago, building an organization, so to speak. I mean, in Unite, they seem to be, if you have 50 members, you could get a group of some kind, but what that group does, I mean, this seems to be where people are falling off the cliff. They get started, they listen, they find these roots, and or they get members of some kind, and they're not sure exactly what to do with them. And that came out in the conversation we were having yesterday. And then as Unison has also got some sort of organizing program, there was a guy who is there in London University with us, and they were talking about something in the project they have in the Birmingham area, which I guess is a larger city here than Bristol.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Unison, you know, I think everyone right now is looking to new ways of doing things, and don't get me wrong.
Which is good.
I'm excited. You know, we're seeing people kind of interested in looking for a new way of doing things, and that's great. You know, the funny thing is, it's not a new way of doing things, is it? You know, you've been doing it for a long time, and ultimately you go right back, this is how we always built organisations, and it's kind of crazy, it's got lost. But they, Unison, I in Birmingham working with Citizens, which is another kind of organizing program.
Citizens is an institution-based organizing model, somewhat similar to many faith-based networks of faith-based community organizations in the United States, the Alinsky IAF or PICO or Gamaliel or DART. And it's a somewhat similar, it's very careful to distinguish itself from the U.S.-based kinds of networks, but it's been influenced by a lot of that, and it's had high visibility for even very small actions in London, particularly for, you know, higher wages, living wage campaigns for cleaners, and so it's definitely done some interesting work in London and starting to branch out around the country from what we've heard. So Acorn in Bristol, where are we now? What are we looking at this point?
So I mean, it's really really early doors for us. We've got a meeting on Saturday, which is going to be a meeting of local residents who we hope to form our first organising committee. We're expecting maybe 25 local residents to come down to that, where we're going to give them a bit of basic training on the Acorn model and kind of what it means to be a member of Acorn, and to ask as many of them as we can to commit to coming out and doing some door knocking with us. It's the community that me, Nick and Stu live in, so it's a community we know a little bit about in terms of what issues are going to, you know, come up. The committee meeting is going to be made up of kind of a mixture of people that we've known from our backgrounds that are politically active already in the area and have been interested in us as we've been setting Acorn up. And also we've been door knocking for a couple of months, just the three of us, to find out about what issues we're hoping the union might work on, and also to get a few local residents that have not been active before to come out and join us.
And here in Little Rock, where Acorn originally was founded, June 18th in 1970, a lot of people know what you're talking about when you say start an organizing committee in a neighborhood, but this is definitely the first organizing committee I've ever seen, while with Acorn, where the first meeting is scheduled for 8 hours. So anybody who comes through this organizing committee, they are ready to organize. At the end of Saturday, you know, everybody's going to get their hand shaken by me, I'll tell you, because this is going to be a great and exciting experience here in Bristol. People are going to go through all the model, talk about issues, and it's actually a... We usually did these leadership trainings. It's more like something like that. It's a great intensive experience that Nick and Stu and Louie have planned here, and they've been doing a lot of work on it. So what kind of issues are you hearing about already on the doors here in Easton?
Well, you know, I mean, Stu kind of, you know, already mentioned about, you know, house prices going up. Obviously, you know, intertwined with that is rent prices going up, and intertwined with that is conditions of housing going down. You know, as soon as there's a demand for something, then either you can stick your prices up or you can care about it less and still charge people to live in it.
Now, do tenants have any kind of rights here in Bristol or the UK?
Yeah, I mean, we have. So things are a little bit strange. Things are changing. So we've got if you're a private tenant, which quite a lot of people now are, I think something like 50-70% of people are private tenants, meaning that they rent either from literally the guy that owns the house, or for a letting agency, who are like the middleman. You sign what's called a short hold tenancy, which normally lasts for 6 months or 12 months. But then after that, what happens is you go into what's called a rolling tenancy. So it just rolls on from there, meaning that, that you've got very little security. The landlord suddenly decides next month I want my house back, you're out, you know.
So in U.S. terms, they would have a lease for 6 months?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but then rolling means it's month to month?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you're there until they tell you otherwise.
Gotcha. So in the U.S., frequently you don't even get a lease in that first 6 months. Mm-hmm. But... there are many tenancies that are month to month, in which case you have very little. I mean, there's not many tenants' rights in the U.S. in most cities, so this is on. Yeah, it sounds like you're in somewhat the same situation, maybe a little better, but
it you know, that does happen here as well, but it's more like in informal black market, illegal immigration, and stuff like that. People exploit.
Somebody who's not supposed to be renting a top attic space or something, a basement. Gotcha.
But I mean, in terms of rights, you know, landlords here are obligated to keep the property safe. They are obligated to do the gas and electricity checks. They are obligated to sort the damp out and fix the repairs and stuff like this. But the reality is that, you know, most people don't know their own rights. Most people don't know how to enforce their own rights. The landlords don't care because the market's so buoyant, as Louis says. So, you know, just to give you one example, like I knocked a door last week, a woman that we're going to try and get involved. Her house is so damp that it was leaking so badly the electricity shut off for 3 days. She had no electricity, hot water or anything. She's got 3 young kids who are getting respiratory problems because of the damp in the building. She tells me she's on benefits. Later on in the conversation, I find out that her benefits are actually stopped, so she's not getting any money. She doesn't know why, because her English is not that great. You know, these are the sort of things we're
talking about. Yeah, no, that's somebody who should be at the meeting. And And these campaigns are also very big in Canada, for Acorn Canada. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get housing standards, essentially, someone like you're talking about, that they're where the city government would have to enforce inspections on private landlords within a certain level, or what are called habitation campaigns in the U.S., but or standards of habitability. That's what, you know, we used to call those campaigns. There was a certain... But the dampness has got to be a huge issue in terms of health as well. That's a very good point. So, and respiratory problems, I know, in many communities are just going through the roof.
Yeah, definitely. And for homeowners as well, because, you know, we've got some people, to be fair to some of the newer residents of Easton who have just moved in and bought their homes in the last 6 months, some of them that we knocked their doors, that they're regretting it now, because now they're responsible to fix their own property, but they can't afford it.
Yeah.
So in the UK, there's some statistics stuff about homeowners being some of the poorest communities in the UK in a weird way, because, you know,
like farmers talk about in the US, they're land rich and dirt poor. House rich and dirt poor here in Bristol. So housing sounds like a big issue, so the tenants and but finding, that'll be interesting if we can find common cause there between some of the landlords and or some of the homeowners as well. That's going to be a challenge.
We've loosely talked about that, you know, but we don't want to try and, you know, divide the community on that issue. And if we can find, you know, issues where they've got the exact same problems, then it's a real win for us and a win for them, hopefully.
Are you hearing anything besides housing issues?
Yeah, so a lot of people have problems with their benefits. There's a lot going on in the UK with them trying to slash the welfare system and stop people. So you get people sanctioned for spurious reasons to not get the benefits, but also workplace issues. People are, you know, ultimately a lot of the problems that people are talking about stem from very, very low wages and insecure employment. So
as you can tell, Nick and Stu, they're gonna, and Louie here, they're going to be busy. Bristol Acorn starting up. It's got some wind behind its sails. We've been lucky today to talk to Stuart Melvin and Louis Herbert, who are now starting to organize along with some other people, Acorn and Bristol. This has been Wage World, 88.3 KABF, www.kabf.org. You can catch the podcast if you missed us now on live streaming or on the radio, and we'll see you next Friday. Thank you.